May it please the court, Mr. Neil Durant to argue for the appellant, Ms. Erica Pacino to argue for the appellate.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Durant, so we begin with you.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Neil Durant, and I represent the appellant Raymond Ruiz today. This is an appeal from a divorce case. The issue for the court today is whether or not the trial court is required to do equity in a motion for a new trial, and can it ignore irrefutable evidence of error. The issue should be viewed in light of the party who is denied the ability to present their case largely due to a dismissal of counsel on the day of trial. This preeminent issue is raised in 4 points of error. And I know the court has read the briefs and matter. I will not review the facts other than to note that the appellant had filed a motion for new trial based on the trial court mischaracterizing property which the parties did not own as community property and refusing to consider evidence of public deed records in balancing the division of the community estate. The issue presented on the first point of review can be simply put, whether or not the trial court can ignore irrefutable evidence of the facts and fail to correct a clearly erred judgment based on flawed evidence. The statute and case law clearly answer this is in the negative. Both the statutory law and case law require that a trial court is charged with dividing any property in a just and right matter, having due regard for the rights of the party. While any trial court has broad discretion in making the division, a trial court should not be allowed to ignore clearly erroneous evidence. Although the property is clear, is considered community property unless otherwise, it is a clear abuse of discretion when the court acts without guiding principles. At the trial of this cause, there were no deeds offered as to the ownership of certain real property and personal property, namely vehicles. The only testimony proffered by the appellee was equivocal at best, and no evidence regarding the inception of title or actual existence of property was given. During the motion for new trial, the appellant attempted to offer the proof of ownership by public record deeds, which were refused under the auspices of not being produced previously in discovery. No evidence was offered by the appellee at the motion for new trial as to what the discovery had taken place during the prejudgment phase of the trial, nor did any way indicate that the deeds proffered were questionable documents, they being certified. Nonetheless, the trial court refused to consider the certified copies and maintained the erred judgment. In short, the trial court ignored clear and convincing evidence of non-ownership of an alleged rental property. Subsequently, the rental property was used to balance against the equities of the parties and resulting in an unjust distribution. The same is proffered with regarding the principle of the ownership of the alleged personal property in the form of vehicles as well. The case of Sandoval versus Radkin speaks directly to the error committed by the trial court when it stated that the purpose of a motion for new trial is to have the trial court correct errors which may have occurred in the course of the trial proceeding. Rather than correct errors committed at trial, the trial court in this case continued to perpetuate the myth of ownership of a property that was clearly not executed in the deeds by either one of the parties and was admitted by both parties that they were not on these deeds.
But the trial court didn't admit them because of the appellant's alleged failure to disclose the deeds during the discovery process.
That is correct. And I think there's another important point that should be made about that, and I don't want to vary too much, but I will say that these deeds were public record, which were known to both sides and equally available. So to sit there and say, well, they didn't produce it in a discovery is disingenuous. They weren't required to produce something that's of public record and already of public record and equally accessible by all parties. The appellant, and for whatever reason, why the discovery was responded the way it was, I don't know. I did not represent him at the time. But if they would have refused to produce it on the grounds that it's public record, that would have been a legitimate response. But the important point here is that the trial court failed, when the motion for new trial was raised, it was clearly shown that there was error in the judgment and just didn't ignore it.
I can't recall. Were there not inventories filed by both parties in this matter?
I do not believe that there were, if my memory serves correct, which was another problem because under local rule, any case that is over 90 or 100 days old, a inventory should be filed by the parties. And obviously that would have been a tool that the trial court could have used. Under the third point presented for review, appellant would urge that the evidence presented at trial was insufficient legally and factually to sustain the findings of the trial court. This point will be addressed if I have sufficient time, but it works hand in hand with the denial of the motion for new trial by abusing its discretion and overruling the motion for new trial. The court should reverse the motion for new trial and return this case to be considered for all proper evidence, both public record and other. Under the second point presented for review, appellant would show that the trial court erred and abused its discretion in failing to grant the appellant a continuance to acquire counsel at the time of trial. It is undeniable that both parties in this case clearly spoke little English. An interpreter had to be supplied for both parties. Even the appellant had little understanding of English. Once his trial counsel had been dismissed, he attempted on several occasions to ask the trial court to allow him time to get counsel to proceed to trial. The court denied the request or ignored it and proceeded to trial. While generally a motion for continuance is in the discretion of the court, and before any unconditional announcement of ready, this does not ignore the subsequent delays or exceptions which can arise because of events. Also, while the granting of a motion for a new trial is in the sound discretion of the court, a clear abuse of discretion occurs if the continuance is denied because proper legal counsel is sought and desired by the party. It is conceded that the absence of counsel alone doesn't entitle a litigant to continuance, reversible error will occur if the appellant can show the denial resulted in a prejudice and he had justifiable excuse. Not knowing whether or not you're going to trial with an attorney until the day of trial, I think, would be a shock to anyone. The trial court also obviously was prejudiced by the fact that he could have brought in evidence had he known how to rebut the claims of the appellee at trial. More importantly, though, and I anticipate appellee, as they have pointed out, was that appellee will point out that the appellant in this case agreed to a withdrawal of counsel. Well, this ignores the capability of the trial court and the attorneys and places the onus and burden on the untrained client to know whether or not they can or should not agree in their best interest to withdrawal of counsel. I would urge that it then argue to the court that that is the responsibility of a trial court, and if the trial court has an attorney standing in front of them on the day of trial that says, I want to withdraw for whatever reason, the response should simply be, no, you should have taken care of this a long time before. And this case had been on file for a substantial period of time. The failure of the trial court to allow appellant sufficient time to acquire counsel of record misplaces the burden of legal and ethical responsibility to a party who clearly did not have that ability. Under the fourth point of presented for review, appellant would urge that the trial court denied trial counsel should have denied the motion to withdraw based upon the legal and ethical considerations that the party had no knowledge of, mainly the appellant in this case. Rule 10 of the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure sets forth 5 grounds. I know the court is well aware of this, so I won't go through it. But in this particular case, the counsel for the appellant, his motion did not comply with 3 of these elements. The motion was defective, prejudice was clear, and the trial counsel failed to comply with the rules of civil procedure. This court should reverse the denial of the motion for new trial and return this with instructions that the appellant in this case should be allowed sufficient time to acquire counsel and then present necessary evidence, including inventories and those other tools which are allowed in the family code, to get a just and right division of the community property. and this matter should not have been simply rammed through by the trial court. That would conclude my presentation. If the crew of the court has any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Let me clarify something in your brief. Is it the contention, or did the evidence show, I guess, that was produced during the motion for new trial hearing, that the trial court improperly classified property as community as opposed to separate? But there's a statement in your brief saying that the trial court awarded property that the parties didn't even own.
That is correct. And the case law speaks to characterization of property. What the case law does not address is, what do you do if the property doesn't even belong to the parties? So it's classified as I read the cases, maybe wrong, but as I read the cases, it's a mischaracterization, whether you call it separate community or whether it's property. In this particular case, the 1843 Castilla property was referred to as rental property, and the proffer was on the motion for new trial, deeds which were shown to not be the signatures or the owners of the parties. The appellant in this case clearly identified it was not his signature. It was another Ramon Ruiz, and the wife in that case was a Selena Ruiz, whereas the Rapelles is Pedrian. I'm sorry, I can't pronounce the name very well. But it was clearly different parties, and they did not own this property. The same with the evidence that was proffered regarding the vehicles. It was claimed that he had numerous vehicles. At trial, no evidence was offered other than a report. What the trial court refused to recognize was the public documents of the Department of Motor Vehicles here in Texas, showing that these cars had long since been transferred out of the appellant's name for a long period of time and were no longer his ownership. So again, if it's a mischaracterization, to answer the court's question, I'm sorry to be so long-winded, but to answer the court's question, if it's a mischaracterization, it's a mischaracterization by calling it a property, community property or separate property. It didn't belong to the parties, period. And the court formally refused to consider it simply because the evidence, which was public record, was not produced at the time of discovery to the appellee. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Durant. Ms. Patino.
May it please the court, my name is Erica Patino, and I represent Selena Peregrina Ruiz. I feel it necessary to give you a little bit of background information on this case. I've been the attorney on this case for the last 2 years. This case started in August of 2012. Mr. Durant is the fourth attorney on this case. So there has always been a question of what the community estate acquired during the time. Mr. Reese made it a point to hide assets in third-party names. He went through three different attorneys, and the reason I sent out discovery in November of 2012 was to get a picture of what actually was in the community estate at the time. Those documents were never produced. I did file a motion to compel January 24th of 2013, and received a supplement in February 7th, 2013 as well, and I attached to my brief as exhibits A and B. He gave very little information regarding any of the community assets. So basically, through my client's understanding of what the parties possessed, I tried to do due diligence in trying to get information on what the estate was. Mr. Reese went through three different attorneys, and the first one was the one that provided the discovery part of it. The second one, Mr. Hyman, out of courtesy, I sent him a copy of the discovery request, and he never provided anything at all, as he withdrew from the case as well. The inventory and appraisements were never filed with the court, as at the time, Mr. Reese did not have representation and he refused to fill one out. So for the last 2 years, I have been trying to get a picture of what the community estate had in it in order to present evidence for a just and right division. So to address the first point, I asked this court to affirm the trial court's denial of a motion for new trial. The trial court can only divide the property in a just and right way with the evidence presented at trial. The court is not a mind reader. The court uses discoveries and inventory and appraisement in order to understand what is possessed by the parties. The second point for the continuance. At the trial, Mr. Reese agreed to release his attorney, knowing that he was set for trial on that day. And so forth, the court respected his decision to allow his attorney to withdraw from the case, and he was left with the burden of representing himself. The court is not there to make the decision for the respondent to say, you know, you really need to think about what you're doing. If the respondent is animate about releasing his attorney and went forth and signed the order, the court has no choice but to release that attorney. So therefore, the burden brought on by that decision is the respondent's alone. And petitioner in this matter, my client, should not be the one to suffer because he made a bad decision. Mr. Reese has been in the United States for a long time. He should understand his limitation when it comes to speaking and understanding English. Obviously, he knows enough to hire and fire attorneys, as he's been through four. Obviously, he knows what withdrawal means, as he has signed three prior orders for withdrawal. So I don't believe that the court abused the discretion in agreeing or allowing Mr. Reese to make the decision to allow their counsel to withdraw on the day of trial. The third point on the mischaracterization, that was due not to the court's error, but that was due to the error of Mr. Ramon Reese for refusing to produce the appropriate information for me to do due diligence on the actual assets possessed by the community. At this point, petitioner was not trying to commit fraud, was not trying to force the court to divide the assets in an unjust way or incorrect way. She based her knowledge on bits and pieces of what Mr. Reese would tell her regarding the assets and what I could put together with our due diligence. And as a matter of fact, Mr. Reese knew that this particular property was in question, as we had a hearing on April 11th regarding the assets. At that point, Mr. Reese had ample time to provide or supplement his discovery responses to prove that he did not own these cars or property at that time, and he failed to do so.
So was that hearing based on your motion to compel?
No, that hearing was based on a motion to set aside the temporary orders that was filed by Mr. Winston Uday. They were contesting the spousal support amount and the child support amount, so I brought up the properties that he owned and the cars that he owned and sold in order to prove that he had sufficient income to calculate the amount of child support and spousal. So that's the reason I presented that. As far as the fourth point regarding the withdrawal of counsel, Mr. Reese actually signed the order. Mr. Reese actually discussed the motion with his attorney before he withdrew. So he fully understood that he could object to his attorney withdrawing, as Mr. Alboreto, I believe, was the third attorney, the one that represented him at trial or withdrew at trial. He knew what to do. He knew whether to say, yes, I want you to withdraw, or no, you have to keep on my case. He was already an expert at hiring and firing attorneys at this point. So I ask this court to please affirm the trial court's decision to deny the motion for new trial. This is just an attempt by appellant to try and relitigate property and debt division that has already been divided. If he had issues with this, he had his day in court on November 5th, trial day.
All right. I don't guess we have any more questions. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Bettina. Mr. Durant, rebuttal.
Please, the court. I'm a bit perplexed because now we have had five or six arguments raised which are not in the appellate record whatsoever. The issue of hiding of assets is not in the appellate record anywhere. There's no reference to that. The discovery was not filed of record. Counsel argues that she was trying to make due diligence, but due diligence would have included researching the public record to know what the parties owned or possessed and did not possess. That was equally available to all the parties. Regarding the copies to other attorneys and what transpired, I have no knowledge of. It's not part of the record. I think it's an improper argument here. What it does to argue discovery issues, though, is to ignore the clear error in this case that property which was not owned by either party was in fact being included as part of the division of the community estate. Appellee cites no law, no rules, no case law to support her position that the failure to provide discovery during the pretrial phase in any way defeats a motion for new trial. She also argues that her client will suffer as a result of this. If a clear and just and equitable division is allowed based upon competent evidence in a court, I don't see how anybody suffers from that, unless, of course, they've already stood to gain from what's happened thus far. Regarding a hearing on the April 11th, that is not part of the record. They have had ample opportunity, just as we did, to include from the reporter and from the clerk's office any and all evidence that they wanted to present. What this hearing was about on April 11th and how that took place, again, I don't know. Which means that the argument of appellees in this case clearly comes down to a question of asking this court to speculate, saying they say that the motions, the withdrawal motions, were discussed between counsel and the appellant in this case. Again, the record is devoid of anything on the record regarding this during any motion, and how they would know what discussions took place or for what length of time between appellant counsel lends one to wonder. But the important point here is the fact that this is a red herring argument. The true argument is whether or not the trial court should have taken the opportunity to correct clearly erred evidence and correct the judgment in a motion for new trial, which is exactly under Sandoval and Villegas and all the rest of those cases clearly say is what this proceeding is to apply for. And you raise that in a motion for new trial. The mere fact that the argument that the appellant in this particular case signed off or agreed to a withdrawal on the day of trial removes the responsibility of the trial court and the attorneys who stand before that trial court to know what their ethical and legal obligations are, and places it on someone who clearly, the layman, who is not trained and who should not do that. And with regard to that, one final statement, I know my time is about to expire, and that is that in this particular case, how ironic it is that the trial court did not attempt to warn the appellant at any time that you would be at a great, as I have heard 100 times and a million times in court, from a judge saying you are at a great disadvantage if you choose not to have counsel in this court with the other party who has counsel. You will be at a great, do you understand that, sir? Do you still desire to go forward? Because the answer to that would have been what he attempted to do 4 or 5 times during the trial, and that is, I want more time, I need a lawyer. And that's all he could get out in English. So if that being the case, I think in the interest of fairness and equity and in the interest of justice, which is what is mandated from the trial courts in family law, is that they are to do justice and they are to do equity. And they have clear discretion to do so, but that is their main calling by both statute and case law. And we would request the court reverse this judgment, return it back for a new trial on the basis of both the property issues and any other issues the court may see fit in the record. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Durant. Ms. Patino, we appreciate both of your arguments today and your briefing for this court. Your case is now submitted, and you are excused. We will now adjourn court.